It's 8:13 now. Good morning. Well, coming up tomorrow, Whole Foods, once again, including KPCW as its beneficiary of the Whole Foods 5% Give Back Program. On the phone with me with details, I have Deborah LaBelle. She's the Metro Marketing Team Leader for Whole Foods Utah. Good morning, Deborah.
This is Deborah LaBelle.
Hi, Deborah. It's Leslie. So tell us a little bit about that 5% Give Back Program. I think Whole Foods does this 2-4 times a year.
Yes, we do it 4 times a year in our community in Park City. And so this Friday, the 20th of January, we will be donating 5% of net sales to KPCW. And we're really excited to partner with KPCW again. It's been several years that we've been partnering, probably 5 years at this point in time. And we just really enjoy it. It's one of our favorite things we do throughout the year.
Yeah, so when you talk about net sales, I mean, what's subtracted from gross sales? Just cost of doing business?
Yes, coupons and stuff like that.
Okay. Any idea how much it can raise for a nonprofit? I guess it really depends on who shows up, but what's the average?
It does. It kind of depends on the day, but I would say it can be anywhere from $3,000 to $5,000.
Okay, that's significant. Tell us why Whole Foods does it.
Well, Whole Foods has a longstanding commitment to being involved and supporting its surrounding community. And it's one of our core values at Whole Foods Market. And it's just part of doing business, being involved in our surrounding community.
All right. And in addition to, of course, the buyback, what are the hours then actually for shopping tomorrow?
So we open at 7 a.m. and we close at 10 p.m.
All right, so plenty of hours to get out there and shop. But between 9 a.m. and 11 a.m., we'll also have the team of John Wells and Nell Larson kicking off our Sundance Reel coverage. So they're doing 2 hours of interviews. So I think you'll be part of that, as well as with some of the filmmakers that are going to be screening their films at this year's festival. I've never been out there because I'm always
Correct. Here.
So tell us a little bit about what happens then.
Yeah, it's an amazing morning. So what they're doing is they're doing a live radio remote from our cafe at Whole Foods Park City, and they'll be interviewing all of the filmmakers. They will also interview me to talk about our 5% day. And it's just a really good morning of filmmakers. And there's just a lot of buzz in the store at that time, and a lot of people come in to shop and to see what's going on with the filmmakers.
Yeah. And then I also want to, babe, thank you also, Whole Foods, providing some of the food and beverages for the filmmakers that do show up coming up starting Saturday morning here at KPCW Studios. So as we speak,
Yes. You've
got a new store under construction. Can you talk to us a little bit about the features of that?
Sure, we do. We're really excited about this new store. It's going to be a lot bigger. I would say almost twice as big as the current store in Park City. And it's going to really better serve our community. We're going to have a lot more local products there. We're going to have a juice bar, which is exciting, and a bigger, more expanded coffee bar as well. And probably my favorite thing would be the tap room. We'll have a tap room with beer on tap and food and things like that. And basically, we'll have a lot more food venues as well. So more prepared foods choices as you're going in for lunch and dinner and things like that.
So would it be the size of, say, like the Trolley Square store?
Yes, it would be kind of similar to the Trolley Square store, where they have all of those different food venues. You know, they have a pizza area, burritos, sandwiches, noodle bowls, things like that. So it'll be similar to that, but probably even more expanded. So this will be our flagship mountain store in the country. So we're really excited about it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm guessing that's a big revenue generator, or is it just really just a part of the overall sales?
It's just a part of the overall sales. And it's really a convenience for our customers to have more options to come in and have a quick, healthy meal.
All right. And then when you guys define what you will sell in your store, you look at a number of what's made up, food is made up of, and what don't you allow?
So there are a ton of ingredients that we do not allow within Whole Foods. We screen every single product as it comes into our store. So just general as highlights, we don't allow any artificial colors, flavors, preservatives, no hormones in our meat, no antibiotics. And then in our whole body department, there are, I believe, 400 ingredients that we do not allow in our whole body, body care ingredients such as parabens and things like that. So it's a very careful process, and we spend a lot of time working with our vendors as they come into the store because we want to make sure that these products don't contain those types of ingredients.
All right. And in terms of like some of the offerings that you would have for the meat section, I mean, do you use locally sourced chicken and meat and things like that?
We do as it's available. We do have to qualify the farms and things like that, but we currently have a local pork product with Ballard Farm, and we're working on some other local meat products as well. But we do our best to provide local meat as it's available that qualifies with Whole Foods.
Okay. So what's the planned opening date of the new store?
So we're on target to open mid-October 2017.
Okay. Boy, that's quite the construction.
It is.
Right? I mean, you started last year, right?
Yes, correct.
But okay,
we're really moving quickly and doing well and right on target with everything we're supposed to be doing.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to tell our listeners?
Just a reminder to come shop on Friday, and it'll be a lot of fun in the store. There'll be a lot of buzz, especially in the morning with the filmmakers. So hope to see everybody there.
Okay. Debbie, thank you.
Thank you so much.
It's Deborah LaBelle, the Metro Marketing Team Leader for Whole Foods Utah. Again, a great way to support KPCW just by going and picking up some groceries. You're listening to the Local News Hour. 8:25 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, a couple thousand people could show up at the top of Park City's Main Street Saturday morning for a march down Main Street that will coincide with the marches happening all over the world and Washington, D.C. In the studio, I have one of the organizers of the event, Cindy Levine. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what is the latest count on people? Do we know?
I just looked at the Facebook page before coming in. 4,100 on the Facebook event page. And I haven't looked at the Eventbrite, but I know it's over 1,000.
Right. So that is people who have said, yes, I'll be there.
Those are people who have said, yes, I'll be there.
So factoring in half of them maybe not showing up, we still could see a couple thousand people.
We still could. And, you know, that's not, who knows if they did the plus one. You know, most people come with a friend or a family member. And, of course, a lot of people won't show up, too. But we're expecting thousands for sure.
Wow. So give us the basics. I mean, it's going to start from the top of Main Street there at the Brew Pub parking lot. But let's talk about somebody who may be coming in from the Snyderville Basin or Heber City.
Yeah, we're recommending that people participating in the march, including our locals here, take advantage of the Richardson Flats parking lot and plan on it taking an hour or so to get into town. There are buses going every 10 minutes. You'll transfer at the Eccles Center. And the reason we just can't emphasize that enough to carpool and use that lot because we want you to be able to march and we want to mitigate the traffic and be respectful of the locals, the workers, the Sundance event. And to keep that street clear, we need to use that lot. So plan on that. Get here early. Dress warm. We're expecting a little bit of snow. It is Park City. Wear your boots. And gather and have fun at the Brew Pub parking lot till we're ready to march.
Well, as we know from the Olympics, for those of us who were here, I mean, riding on the bus was actually pretty fun.
Yeah.
Just to meet a different, you know, group of people rather than the same old, same old.
Absolutely. And who knows who you'll meet. You know, we have people coming in as far as Evanston and Idaho. So,
all right. In terms of how this is being organized, though, so once people get to the transit center from a bus, what, then just plan to walk up to the top of the street and you're gathering there?
Exactly. And we will have restrooms up there to accommodate the masses. And I just think the energy in the groups, I know different organizations will have banners up so they can find each other. And, you know, just make a plan if you're coming with an organization. Have a meeting spot.
All right. And then the horn sounds at 9 and just the Chelsea Handler still planning to
lead. She'll be leading the march with Park City teens from different organizations and groups. I think we'll have a nice representation at the lead. We're going to head down Main Street and take a right on Heber Ave, take a right on Sweet Alley rather, and in the flagpole lot for a rally with some great speakers.
All right, tell us a little bit about that.
I just found out about that late last night. We released it, and I think it's a very thoughtful group. And there's a list that just came out in the media. And to be perfectly honest, I just, you know, we've been talking a lot about the speakers. We've just confirmed these. Everything's unfolding daily. So there's a handful there we'll be releasing in the press. And we have till 11 o'clock to speak.
Okay. And I'll just throw off some of the names that I recognized. I mean, Salt Lake Mayor Jackie Piskuski will be there. Park Record columnist Terry Orr. We've got Park City Youth Mayor Maya Levine. Is this your daughter?
It happens to be my daughter.
Oh, wow. And then I noticed that Dolores Huerta, she's actually, I think, the focus of one of the films in this year's film festival.
Yeah.
So, and then, of course, Chelsea Handler. Let's talk then. In terms of anything in particular you want marchers to do, I've seen lots of this, you know, pink hats or not. And then I saw a blog post about how we just really need to cut the cutesy and stand up for passion and purpose. And really, we're not going to make a difference wearing goofy hats and carrying cheeky signs.
You know, I read that blog, and I think everyone's going to express their feelings differently. And it's up to the individual. There's a lot of purple for unity. There's a lot of white hats out there. There's a lot of blue hats. There's pink hats. It's a freedom of speech march. And what we ask and what we want from this is to be aligned with our mission statement, which is extremely thoughtful. It's respecting civil liberties, human rights, women's rights that deeply impact us all. And we just ask that we stay positive, we stay aligned with that message, and make this a very powerful march.
And you will need a hat. I mean, it's scheduled to snow.
Absolutely.
It's going to be cold,
and
so
gloves.
You'll need a hat.
And gloves and boots. Wear your ski socks.
Yeah. So in terms of the message, I mean, what do you think that is? I mean, what are we trying to show here? And again, it's not part of the Sundance Film Festival,
but it
is in the Sundance Film Festival.
It is. You know, the creative community reached out and wanted to be able to march in alignment with the Women's March in Washington. And I think it speaks volumes when you look at over 300 marches globally. We needed a platform to have our voices heard. These are very important issues. We want to make sure we continue moving forward on and not stand down on these civil liberties. So the point is numbers. Look at the volume of people who care so deeply. But my goal is to, when this march is over with, to keep getting involved. You know, democracy is not a spectator sport. I had a friend say that to me. And we have to keep a pulse, especially at your state levels. It's extremely important. And make sure we do not move backwards when it comes to these rights we're marching for.
In terms of the communication between your organizers and Sundance, has there been any? I mean, has it really just been with Park City Municipal?
It's been with Park City Municipal, who's been excellent to work with. They're very prepared. They know what they're doing. It was such a pleasure working with them. And we as organizers wanted to make sure we were doing everything we could to make sure this was safe, peaceful, accessible, and a positive experience.
All right. Because Sundance is here, the traffic and security operatives are basically in place. I'm guessing it needs to be stepped up a little more just when you have.
I think the city has taken big steps in making sure that everybody would be safe. We have a lot of volunteers to help direct traffic, a lot of messaging. So, yes, they're very prepared for the additional impact on the town.
Yeah. Are you good with the number of volunteers you've got?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
And any idea what this is costing to host? I mean, did you had to apply for and get a permit to do this?
We did. The permit was waived because it is a freedom of speech march, but we did a GoFundMe page where we've actually raised more than our goal, which we have needed because we wanted to provide additional transportation. We wanted to provide additional restrooms to help mitigate the public restrooms on the city. We needed to be able to identify our volunteers. We needed to be able to accommodate all of the things that go with the rally. And so we're very pleased from everybody who donated, including our co-sponsors that are listed in the media as well.
How much did you raise?
We raised a little over $21,000.
Impressive. And then you just handed that over to Park City Municipal?
I'm managing all of the expenses right now.
Okay. Again, so once we ended the flagpole parking lot, then, I mean, just people taper off, get back onto a bus that'll get you to the Eccles Center and then back out to Richardson.
Yeah, the nice thing is it's right by the public transit center. So we ask that you take the bus back or walk around Main and enjoy your local businesses and shop.
Well, not sure we've seen anything like this.
It'll be exciting.
Pretty exciting, yeah. All right, we've got, of course, it's a Twitter handle, March on Main, and people can get more information. How?
Yeah, actually, if you text 888-777-MARCH-ON-MAIN. You'll get updated information on street closures and any other additional information that transpires with the march. The city's got to tap on that, so it's a great way to get updated information in real time.
Okay, go down to Lower Main Street and visit some of those businesses down there.
Absolutely.
Okay. Hey, anything else you wanted to mention, Cindy?
Just to remember to stay aligned with our mission statement and make it a great day.
Okay. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Well, members of the Summit County Council just met this morning at the Sheldon Richens Building to make an announcement, likely the purchase of the acreage for a transit and affordable housing development. On the phone with details, I have Summit County Council Chairman Chris Robinson. Good morning, Chris.
Hi, Leslie.
So that announcement made just a few minutes ago, what was it?
Well, it was announcing that yesterday Tom Fisher, our county manager, issued the notice of exercise on our $3.7 million purchase of what's known as the Klein-Dolly 29-acre parcel on Rasmussen Road. And it will trigger now a 30-day closing period.
All right. You were facing a deadline to close. Is that correct?
Yes, the deadline expires tomorrow.
All right. So where do we go from here? I mean, we still haven't seen any plans for the development. We don't even know if what you are thinking about will get approved.
Yeah. So we're going to have to go through, once we have a plan that we like, the regular process of entitlement that any property and property owner or developer would have to go through. Our focus now, of course, in the next 30 days is to get it, finalize the closing and settle. But I think that we need to convene a group of the stakeholders and figure out exactly what the best mix is. I mean, we had some help from the University of Utah, and they went through a scenario analysis with us on various levels of transit-oriented development and park and ride and a little commercial. But we have a lot more work to do there and need to bring in a lot more partners to make sure that what we come up with is really the right mix that's a win-win for the neighborhood and also that moves the needle on workforce housing and some of our transit issues.
Yeah, so how much?
So, go ahead.
How much acreage are we talking about? And I know not all of it is developable.
Yeah, there's 29 acres altogether, and there's a portion of it that is along East Canyon Creek and on the north side of the creek that's not developable. And we're going to acquire that with open space funds. We're spending of the $3.7 million, there's $1.2 million that's coming from open space, and that will also allow some trail connections along East Canyon Creek that have been long sought.
So the $1.2 million you say coming from your open space funds, what about the other $2.5 million?
The other $2.5 million is coming from the Municipal Services Fund.
Okay. Does that wipe that out?
I don't think so, or I don't have the balance in front of me, but it's apparently we have the money in there to do that.
Okay. Let's see. Is that a good price for the property?
I think so. I mean, as we got the option, we've talked to a lot of other people at various times, and we think it's a good value. It was under contract for more than that prior to this option that we secured in March.
All right. Let's take a look. Anything else you think we need to say about that?
Other than I think the property is uniquely situated in an area where we can find a good use for it, and we're pleased to have a land position there.
All right.
From which we can do things.
Taking a look at the agenda, it sounds like the council really just got some informational updates on the Recreation Master Plan, Summit Community Power Works, and Utah Clean Energy. Any news that our listeners should know about?
I think it's remarkable the way the Basin Recreation, Park City Municipal School District have collaborated on the Mountain Recreation Facilities Master Plan. It, you know, if each of those three entities did their own thing and didn't work together, we would have a lot of inefficiency in that. They're to be commended for great collaboration where they share resources and share ideas and build things that have multiple purposes. Thought that was great. And then on the topic of the Summit Community PowerWorks, the efforts led by Mary Krista Smith in helping secure the Georgetown Prize, you know, it's great. Hopefully we win the prize, but regardless, it will have been a great win. You know, the amount of energy efficiency and renewable energy that is strategies that have been implemented and our outgrowths of that are huge. And also with Utah Clean Energy on our solar program. So I think it was a great day, I thought.
Also during public input, you heard from Judd Warner with the Climate Lobby asking if the council would approve a resolution endorsing a revenue-neutral carbon fee. What's your first take on that?
Well, at first I thought that he was wanting us to come up with the revenue-neutral carbon fee at the county, you know, and I don't know what that looks like. You know, it's revenue-neutral, I guess. We tax carbon and we reduce some other fee somewhere else. But I think what it is the resolution asking the U.S. Congress or the administration in D.C. to implement such a thing. And, you know, he mentioned that Salt Lake City had signed such a resolution. And so, you know, I think they're, maybe something to it. We asked our sustainability director, Lisa Yoder, to take the four or five documents that he gave us and to schedule a work session. But we don't know enough about it right now to judge, but I think there may be something to it.
All right, and basically a brief unscheduled discussion about the Hyatt House there on 224. The word is that neighbors have complained that the lights are too bright, but when Community Development Director Pat Putt and Sean Lewis have gone out and measured, the lights are at or below the required standard. So what can you make of this? I mean, can we do anything to resolve the issue for neighbors who think it is a problem?
You know, I don't know. I think what we can do is make sure that the developers of Hyatt House follow the approvals they were given. And, you know, as often there's at least two sides to every story. The county's side, as evidenced by those two staff members you mentioned, is that they're in full compliance. Some of the neighbors still think they're not. The truth may lie in the middle. I don't know, but I would hope that it's not that subjective, that it can't be determined, that it can be determined easily whether they're in compliance or not. And if they aren't, they should comply. And if they are, we should let them alone.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention, Chris?
No, I think not.
Okay. Thanks for your time. 8:47 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, over the next 10 days, thousands of people, like maybe nearly 47,000, will descend on Park City for the annual Sundance Film Festival. One of those who has the final say as to what gets put on the festival's big screens is Festival Director of Programming, Trevor Groth. He joins me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
So at this point, the hard work done? I mean, is it just the next 10 days a matter of sustaining yourself for some very long days and getting through traffic?
For me personally, I would say, yeah, the heavy lifting is over. You know, as director of programming, my insanity is in November when we're locking the program. You know, having watched months and months of all the thousands of submissions that came in,
yeah,
and then making the final selections. But now that as we're gearing up right before the festival, all of the other departments are working so hard to, have this show get ready to go. So the insanity is happening. I'm just in my little programming bubble.
Yeah, I think I heard more than 4,000 submissions this year, record?
Yeah, over 4,000 features submitted, and I think around 9,000 short films submitted. So yeah, a record number of submissions, which is great. It speaks to the vitality in the film communities all over the world right now, and I think the final selections show that as well.
Yeah. So 120 feature-length films?
Yeah, around 120 features and around 66 shorts, I think. And then also a bunch of VR work in our New Frontier program and some episodic work. We opened up the submissions this year to episodics as well.
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about that because we're really seeing an increasing amount of these episodic programs coming to the festival. I mean, I guess I'm just wondering why. I mean, it's not like you don't have anything else to choose from.
Yeah, those thousands of films weren't enough for us. We just saw more and more the kind of storytellers that Sundance has always been about, you know, working in different forms, you know, whether it's episodic series or in VR. And, you know, Robert Redford, when he started Sundance, it was about supporting storytellers. And that's why over the years we've had not just screenwriting and directing labs, but also theater labs and composing labs, editing labs, and whatever, you know, form you're working in. I think there's a sort of independent storyteller that Sundance likes to support.
Well, and then this just came out of Bloomberg, Netflix reporting yesterday. It had added a record 7 million new customers in the fourth quarter and signing on more than 5 million new customers abroad. So there's obviously a market then for what, you know, we like binge watching, I guess. Huh?
Yeah, I think as there's more and more opportunities for, you know, audiences all over the world to connect with different kinds of storytelling, I think they're going to get hungrier and hungrier for choice. And I think that's good for Sundance. I think that's good for the kind of filmmakers that we support because, you know, whatever form it is, whether it's a film or a series or short films, I think that people want to see something different. And I think if you just feed them the same stuff over and over and over, they'll grow tired of that and seek alternatives. And that's where we come in.
You'll mention one of the episodes that you bring into the festival or two.
Yeah, well, it was interesting. You know, we historically have done, you know, a lot of sort of launching new series. Like last year we did the OJ Made in America, and that was from ESPN. And we did Top of the Lake, the Jane Campion series. So we've done it over the years to kind of launch them. And now we actually have some series and some pilots, independent pilots, that are actually looking for distribution the way a film might, and whether they get picked up by Amazon or Netflix or another series like we had with the animated show Animals that we premiered here, and then HBO bought it, and it's a series there. So I think that whole market around these type of work is really interesting. And we have, you know, we have a series called Hentified, which is a really funny film short form series looking at sort of gentrification in Los Angeles. It was produced by America Ferrera, and she stars in it. And it's really one of the smartest looks at that subject that I've ever seen. And it comes in this sort of short-form episodic series.
All right. In terms of anticipation, I know you don't have a crystal ball here, but, I mean, what do you anticipate one of the stories that'll come out of this year's festival will be?
That's a good question. I mean, I do think there's something in the air right now because of everything that's happening in the world, you know, politically, socially, culturally. I think everyone's paying attention, and I think that's a good thing for these films. I think people are going to want to see these different perspectives that we're offering here at the festival. And I think especially in a lot of the documentaries, I think there's a number of pieces in the festival that look at police violence and police corruption, which is a very hot button subject. Films like The Force, which looks at the Oakland police force as they're undergoing federal reform, and you see the complications of trying to do that in these old sort of systems. And then there's something that's actually screening tonight on our day one called Whose Streets, which is made by filmmakers, and they use footage from people who lived in Ferguson, you know, post the Mike Brown shooting, and they really feel like the true story hasn't been told. And so you see this really raw, emotional footage from the people who live there that I think has a real power to it.
Yeah. Sundance has always stayed out of politics, and yet just really just bringing politics to the forefront, I mean, and just in terms of these films. But by taking on or bringing this new climate program, have you taken a step kind of over that line in the sand?
You know, it's a good question, and it's something you're right. We've always felt Sundance's role is to give the artists a platform to voice their opinions and to tell their stories. And that's our mission. This year we have called out a strand of programming. This year we're calling The New Climate, which looks at films that deal with environmental issues, especially around global warming. And, you know, it's not like we created a section and included films we otherwise wouldn't have done. What we've done is we've programmed the films the way we always have, and then we looked at the subject that we had, and there were these films, a really interesting group of films that dealt with this topic. And for us, calling it out is maybe a little bit more of a political stance than we typically do, but for me personally, I can't even speak for Sundance on this one, but for me personally, I think, you know, that issue, I think global warming, I think is something that transcends politics. I think it's something that we all have to deal with and pay attention to, and I think these films do an amazing job at opening up the stories a little bit and getting at the truth of sort of what we're facing right now, and hopefully it will make people pay attention.
Yep, and I guess, I mean, I don't know the timing on this. I mean, was this something that you saw that you thought about the new climate program as you saw the films kind of come in, or was it Trump got elected and it's like, oh, let's get it.
Yeah. No, we'd actually been talking about this for a while, actually for a few years even. It's kind of been something that we've been discussing. You know, the environment is an issue that Robert Redford has always had a passion for, you know, and sort of the issues around it. And he actually was, you know, we were talking to him, and he was asking us if we'd seen any good, you know, environmental films recently. And at that time, a while ago, we sort of hadn't. You know, we historically have shown a lot at Sundance, you know, films like An Inconvenient Truth and Blackfish and The Cove. But in the last couple of years, we maybe hadn't seen as many. So we sort of said, well, maybe we can use the festival to have some conversations around, you know, where are they? You know, can we see more? But then coincidentally, as these submissions started to come in, we said, oh, no, we actually have some great films here to showcase this year and to draw attention to this subject.
Yeah, so from the director of Chasing Ice, we've got Chasing Coral. That seems like a real popular one.
Yeah, you know, he really uses film, Jeff Orlowski, to the director of both, to its full advantage, because he creates these amazing visuals that show you very clearly the issues that are happening. With Chasing Ice, it was about the global warming that was affecting the glaciers, and in this he uses cinematography to look at the coral and the changing coral and how rapidly it's dying off all over the world. And so it really, both films have a real power and I think speak to the potential of what film can do.
Yeah. And then as somebody who lives in Southern California, you know this all too well, the whole story of California water and power.
Yeah, that's right. There's a documentary in our documentary competition called Water and Power that looks at, you know, the battle over the water in California, sort of historically. It kind of takes the almost like a Chinatown sort of approach to the storytelling, and you really get into the complicated nature of it, as a lot of these films do, and really I think sort of opens up the conversation around these issues.
And then let's just touch on a couple of the dramatic ones that, you know, are in the competition.
Look, I do think it's a really sort of heightened time right now in terms of what's happening for certain people and certain cultures. And I think there's a couple of big films that are going to get a lot of attention at the festival, and including probably some big, you know, sales, hopefully, knock on wood. But also because they're very timely issues in what they're dealing with. One is called Mudbound by Dee Reese, who had a film here that actually kicked off the festival called Pariah. It was a very personal story for her. And then she went on to make Bessie with Queen Latifah, that sort of historical biopic. And now she takes, I think, everything she developed in that and tells this story about an African-American soldier coming back from World War II who, you know, faced hell fighting the Nazis over in Germany, and then comes back to his small town where he has to still kind of deal with all these issues, including the KKK. And so I think the timeliness of the issues around that were happening then are still relevant now. The other one real quickly is The Big Sick, about a Pakistani-American telling his personal story. It's this guy Kumail Nanjiani, who's a very funny comedian on Silicon Valley. And this is his personal story he wrote with his wife. It's about their falling in love, but also gets into what it's like to be a Pakistani American, in America. So, those are two, I think, big films that people are going to be talking about.
Yeah. Since you've seen most, if not all, of the films being screened, I mean, do you sit and watch them for a second or third time in the theater and kind of maybe next to the director and kind of watch reaction? Or
I don't have time to watch the whole entire film, but I do, you know, I introduce the films, and then I always stay as long as I can before I have to go off and do my next introduction, just to feel the room, to feel like, especially for the comedies, it's great to feel that collective laughter around them. If I'm moderating the Q&A, I'll come back early to kind of feel the end there and to feel the energy in the room. And so I definitely like to get a sense of how these films play. Plus, seeing them up on the big screen is something that I love to do as well, because you really see the films as they were meant to be seen.
Right, instead of your little iPad
yeah,
or something.
Yeah. I've got a pretty good home setup, but nothing like what we have here.
All right, so you're pretty proud of what you've put together then.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a big year for these films, and I think, like you mentioned, there's more and more opportunities for these films to get out there in a big way, even post-festival, and so I hope people are paying attention, that even if they can't catch all of the films they'd like to hear, keep an eye out, because they'll be coming to you soon afterwards.
And they sometimes eventually make it right here to our own art film
yeah.
house, so it's
yeah.
great. Trevor, thanks for spending some time with us.
My pleasure.
Good luck for the next 10 days.
Thank you.
It's Trevor Groth, Director of Programming for Sundance Institute.